Yo, yo, what is going on? It's the Matt Biamonte podcast, doing a NBA playoff preview edition specific to the Los Angeles Lakers, a team that is near and dear to my heart. I am recently back on the bandwagon post-deadline. It's amazing how much more enjoyable the NBA is when you are a fan of a specific team. When you like the players on your team, it's crazy to think. But with Russell Westbrook getting traded and Pat Beverly getting sent out of town, they became more likable. The guys they brought in, Jared Vanderbilt, D'Angelo Russell, they've been enjoyable to watch. And then it's expanded the roles of guys like not Malik Beasley, he came in the trade, but Austin Reeves, Dennis Schroeder. So we want to talk about the Lakers and their chances of the 7 seed, and they will be starting their series on Sunday. I'm recording this with Kyle Bruderer, who will join in a moment on Saturday afternoon before game one that starts on Sunday. And here's what, let's just get into the conversation. Kyle and Matt, two longtime Laker fans, breaking down this team and their chances in the 2023 playoffs. As always, my go-to Laker friend and, you know, I don't want to say insider because we don't live in L.A. We live in Utah, but I can't think of someone who knows this team better from a fan's perspective than you. Have you watched every single game this season?
I've watched every single game, and I think that's what's going to make this this podcast very interesting, because I know that you've probably watched, five or something like that?
Maybe.
A very small, you know, percentage. However, I think that because you stay so informed in the media world of basketball and the analytics and everything, that I think that you still have like a pretty good idea. But I think I will be able to offer some insights that maybe, you know, are not there. So I watched
some highlights, and I follow some guys on Twitter, but I have not watched every second. So I'll rely on you. But before I brought you on, I just kind of talked about how it's amazing how much more enjoyable the NBA is when you like the players.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Just help me understand how much different this team is just from a likability perspective, and also from how they play on the floor now that Russell Westbrook and Pat Beverly aren't in the mix.
Anybody can see that the Russell Westbrook, you know, experiment was a failure. Like it, you know, even from the very beginning, it just wasn't going to work. And to a degree, I feel bad for Russ, because it's just, he is who he is. He's unapologetically him, but at the same time, it's like he has to fit. He's very much a professional in doing what's asked of him, but almost to a fault, where it's like he's like, okay, I'll fill this role, but it's like he still does what he does within that kind of role. And he'll have some games where he's pretty good, and you see, you know, some even flashes of old Russ is still not what you need on this particular team. Like, it just was a mistake from the beginning. But with that being said, I think that the team just, like, they just kind of built this culture of losing. And especially, there were so many games before the trade where in late game situations we were able to make it close and interesting. And that's something that I want to touch on with this team, is just the not quitting, like the really sticking with it regardless of the deficit. But having Russell Westbrook in late game situations lost us a lot of games. He would try to make these clutch plays and clutch shots where it resulted in just an awful miss or a turnover. And it was just so deflating. And you could just see it in the body language of the players. And it wasn't good. And I think they made the right call by And it was a really difficult thing to do because of his contract and the circumstances. And there's a lot of teams that don't necessarily want to have Russ on their team, which sucks for him. But at the same time, it's like, he's not going to make us better. And so I'm glad that Pelinka was able to pull that trade. And, you know, and we can get into that. I feel like I'm kind of branching out to a few different segments that we can have with this. Seriously. But ultimately, the shift, it's not only Russ, but also Patrick Beverley. Beverley is like, even when he was on our team, it still drove me nuts. Like, just the talking and everything else going on. And he was so, like, you could tell that the players kind of appreciated him to a degree, but it's like, you could tell that it wasn't meshing with what the Lakers were trying to accomplish, like, culture-wise. I think that you need that kind of, like, bulldog type of player, but he was just more of a pest than just that, you know, that tough guy, you know, back it up kind of guy. So it's very, very different, and we have some shooting on this team now, which has been exactly what this team has needed from the very beginning. And so the whole Russell Westbrook thing made no sense at all, because you have years and years and years of data showing that he's not going to get you that. And you use all this money and you can't bring in other shooters. It's like, who is he even going to pass it to get us shots? It's like, that's kind of my take on the Westbrook stuff. But now you have players that make the right plays at the right times.
I agree with you to a sense, in terms of, you know, maybe a little too much was put on Russ in terms of the failure. I think injuries played a role, you know.
Of course.
You go, you know, it wasn't all. But where I stopped short of feeling bad for him is, you know, you already touched on the in-game stuff. There was too much out-of-game stuff that bothered me too. Like, in the offseason, I'm rapping, I'm picking up the option, even though everyone knows I was miserable and I didn't fit in, I don't give a rip. You know, I'm 47 million rapping here. Oh, LeBron breaks the record, I'm going to scream in Darvin Ham's face in the locker room afterwards. It's just, there's just too much of that crap that, even though I think he is a pro, like, and I really respect that he likes to play in every game and he takes his craft seriously. You know, he's not load management guy. Like, I totally respect that. But there's just too much unnecessary crap where it wears on you. It wears on you as a fan. I can only imagine it wore on them in the front office and his players. And I'm just glad. I wasn't sure they were going to, but clearly it was the right decision. It might be too little too late. It's going to be hard for them to get to the finals. But regardless, I think it has put the franchise back on a better and more positive path. And that's really enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, I agree. I think, I don't know at what point, if you want to talk, well, we're going to talk about it regardless. But I think there's two players, aside from LeBron and AD, because you obviously know what you're going to get out of them. Well, AD, it's either awesome or terrible. LeBron, I feel like you get some consistency there. But I think the two players that have really saved our season are Austin Reeves and Dennis Schroeder. Those two guys have been so good. And Dennis Schroeder, like, I'm glad that we didn't, you know, I'm glad that he didn't take the money that we offered him a couple years ago. I'm glad that it worked out that way, but he has come back and he has proven himself time and time again. He probably puts forth more effort than anybody else on this team on the defensive and offensive end. He's been super consistent. He's only had maybe one or two games where he just did not play super well. He's a great shooter and he's one of our best defenders on the guards. And that I loved how, what was the name of the guy who did the podcast that you sent over to me? I loved how he was talking about how, look, we need to play Dennis Schroeder as many minutes as possible. He needs to be the one to guard Ja Morant. And I 100% agree with that, because D'Angelo Russell, will blink and Ja will be gone. D'Angelo is – I like D'Angelo, but D'Angelo is so slow. Like, he's
D'Angelo's even watching him play. You don't play him regardless of the circumstance. The situation has to be right.
Yes, absolutely. And D'Angelo does a lot of great things, but there's definitely, like you said, the matchup situation. There's sometimes where he just is virtually ineffective. And Dennis Schroeder is effective regardless of the circumstances. And so I think Schroeder, he's such a scrappy defender. And I think that he will definitely cause some fits for Ja Morant. Ja Morant's going to play well. I'm not too worried. I mean, I don't think anyone's really going to, you know, shut down Ja Morant, but we have to have someone that will prevent him from getting a bunch of easy buckets, because that we're going to be in trouble if that starts happening.
Tell me if you think I'm wrong here, and I'm glad you brought up Schroeder. I wanted to bring him up because I've been equally impressed what he did in the play-in game. He saved the season, quite frankly.
Here's the thing: there were a lot of games this year that looked just like that. Like, there were a lot of games that he put forth that kind of effort and really saved us late in late game situations. So he is the guy that, you know, like, you would have wanted if we had him in place of Russell Westbrook in a lot of those late game situations, we probably would have had the fourth or fifth seed.
Yeah.
No problem.
And you know what I love about him too? Because I did not like him his first stint in LA. It just felt like he had an agenda. In a lot of ways, he felt like Russ. Like, Schroeder is the anti-Russ in that, you know, I feel like he was playing for a contract. It was about the money. He got offered the extension, thought he was worth more, kind of became a problem. They let him go. Goes to Boston because no one wanted to pay him that money. That didn't work out. He comes back around to L.A., and I think he was humbled.
He was, for sure.
And it was just, hey, play ball, and now he's fitting in. He's accepted a different role. He does not play the same way that he played his first stint in L.A., where it was a lot of pick and roll. I'm going to dominate the ball in isolation a lot. Like you said, he's become a really good spot-up shooter. He can handle the ball, but that's not his only skill set. Defensively, he's really blossomed. I think he has done what I think the front office wanted Westbrook to do. And Westbrook is just incapable of doing that for a myriad of reasons. But he needs to be re-signed. Not paid for sure. $100 million. But if you could get him for a 2-year, $30 million, sign me up for something like that, because he is fitting beautifully with LeBron and AD. He's doing all the things a point guard to do. We'll have to see what happens with Russell. It's going to be hard to lose him just from an asset, but Schroeder makes more sense to me being in the starting lineup going into the playoffs.
I'm so glad that you say that, because I was ready to duke it out with you about that were the case. And I know that, like, when we traded for D'Angelo, you were not thrilled about it. But it's like D'Angelo, I think it's going to be really tricky because D'Angelo feels like he's a max player. And, you know, for some teams, he might be. We can't pay him max money, and if that's where he's at, like, I think we're going to lose him. And based on the way that Schroeder and Reeves have been playing, I'm 100% okay.
You have to pay Reeves. You have to.
You have to. I will lose my mind. Dude, the amount of anguish and despair that I felt when we let Caruso go this will be double that with Austin Reeves.
Yep.
I never ever thought that I could, you know, enjoy a player that had kind of similar story to a degree, as far as, you know, going undrafted and, you know, kind of working your way up through. I mean, he didn't really work his way up through the G League, but it's like had a really good summer league, you know, had a few minutes here and there his rookie year and just really blossomed. And he's my favorite Laker, like, by far.
Oh, yeah. I love watching him. Awesome.
He is so consistent. He looks like he shouldn't be there. Like, he just – and I love his mentality, because he's completely fearless, but he always wants to make the right play. He's like – he's an amazing teammate. We cannot let him go. I will lose it. I will absolutely lose it if we don't pay that man.
I will retire being a Lakers fan until Pelinka is gone. If we lose Reeves.
Yeah, I'm pretty much on that train with you too, because the Lakers, Definitely, and you know just as well as anybody, there's been a lot of moments where it's, or even stretches of time where it's like, this is bull crap, like we're making all these horrible decisions. But it's like the Lakers have played such a role in large chunks of happiness in my life, that it's like I can't not be a Laker fan. But it's also like you have these super high expectations of the way you're supposed to feel. And so
it's not a high expectation. He's a starting caliber player. Yeah. Pay him what he's worth. It's not hard.
It's an easy call.
Imagine if this team had Caruso too. It's they would be a defensive juggernaut with and Anthony Davis and LeBron and Vanderbilt. And so, yeah, but Schroeder has been awesome.
Yeah.
I'm very interested to see, and we might differ here on this, how Schroeder is played is going to tell me a lot about Darvin Ham, because I am very iffy on Darvin Ham.
But no stretch of the imagination
do I feel like we landed the next Mike Malone or Eric Spoelstra or just some dude that could be here for a decade. I don't feel that way.
And yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily feel that way either, but in watching, I don't know if you're going to get to this, but in watching the way that he has responded to, because there were some games where he left Russ in the game when he shouldn't have, but there are definitely a handful of games where he benched Russ at the end of the game, because I feel like he's been going with the players that are performing well. Even just the other day in the Minnesota game, D'Angelo Russell got benched pretty much the whole second half because he was sucking.
That's a good point. I do like that.
So he doesn't give me he's a player's coach for sure. He doesn't show me the vibe of like he's top of the food chain, commands that respect. It's kind of like I don't know. You could totally be right with that, but given the circumstances and the players we have, like maybe it's the right fit for now. I just don't know.
Well, we're gonna find out in the series against Memphis, because if he doesn't necessarily have to start Schroeder, but Schroeder needs to play more minutes than Russell.
Exactly.
And I feel like at times too, there's been a little, and this is a nitpick criticism. I feel like he's been a little slow to adjust. Like that Minnesota game, we figured it out just in time to win.
Yeah.
But that probably should have happened sooner, and then maybe it doesn't turn into that. Like AD sat for way too long in the first half.
He did.
And I think that's where Minnesota went on a little bit of a run. And so,
yeah, I thought that there were some questionable things there. I don't know if that was just – I don't love it when coaches have preset rotations that they just stick with. And I don't think that Ham is necessarily like that. I think that maybe to a degree, but it didn't make sense when Karl Anthony Towns is getting into foul trouble and he's sitting. I was like, eventually it did change, but I was like, why are we not playing Anthony Davis?
Yep.
When you know that they can't sub in Karl Anthony Towns.
Or if they do, he's not going to be able to play aggressive defense or he fouls out.
Yeah. So that, I agree with you on that one for sure. That could have been an adjustment made, you know, 10 minutes sooner than it was.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how the.
Yeah. They're in a good spot, man. Memphis is a really good draw
for them because of the injuries. They should really take it to them in the paint.
I agree. However, this is something that I want to point out after watching all of these games that I have. What's so bizarre is I feel like the Lakers play better against teams that have their full strength, which is weird, but it's almost like they don't know how to prepare for teams when you have a bunch of randos in the game.
Yeah.
Like those two games against Utah, like how on earth are both of those games as close as they are? And
even Minnesota.
Yeah. I feel like is a trend. It's discouraging and promising at the same time. It's discouraging that they allow these, you know, rando guys to just develop a, you know, double digit lead on these teams. And then suddenly, you know, they're able to turn it around and claw back and win at the end. So, I mean, being able to, you know, face adversity and come back from being down, that's that's nice. That's impressive that they don't just have, you know, that they're not quitting. But putting themselves in that situation in the first place is kind of alarming. And with this Memphis team, when you don't have Steven Adams and you don't have Brandon Clark, I feel like there's still enough of what Memphis normally has that it's not going to be too weird. So I don't know. But you know what is, I think is going to be a key player for Memphis is Tyus Jones.
Yeah.
Tyus Jones kicks our butt every time we play against him. He is just near automatic when he's shooting the ball. He passes. I think he has the best like assist to turnover ratio in the NBA or at least one like really close.
Yep.
He does an incredible job, and he seems to just murder us whenever we play against him. So that, I think, is going to be a challenge, especially if he and Ja are in the game together, because Schroeder is going to have to play on Ja Morant. Who is going to guard Tyus Jones? Because D'Angelo is going to get cooked. It's going to have to be Reeves. Reeves is a crappy defender, but he's not a – he'll make shots a little bit more difficult, and he's a good team defender, but he's not a, you know, lock-you-up type of defender. I don't
think he's not really, he's not like Caruso in that regard.
No, definitely not.
Memphis does thing, though, that I think will negate what you just talked about, because that's certainly an element there. And it's got to come from LeBron, ultimately, because the way he played in that first half against Minnesota, it seems like he didn't think it would be that hard, or he didn't care. And then he locked it in after the second half. The one thing that Memphis has, though, that should negate that, in my mind, is Dillon Brooks, just the most hated man in the NBA. It won't take him long to do something that upsets me and probably the Lakers, and I think that will motivate them to care. At least that's what I like to think, is that Dillon Brooks does so many weird things that might offset the fact that they're smaller and missing players.
I agree with that. I don't know if I've said this to our listeners that, I mean, we have done a podcast in way too long, but my girlfriend has become a diehard Laker fan on her own, which has been awesome. But like, I remember how much she hated Jimmy Butler when we watched the finals in 2020.
Yep.
And I was like, man, you are, remember the guy who like hit Donovan Mitchell between the legs in that one highlight we saw? I was like, yeah, that's Dillon Brooks. That's who we're playing against. She's like, oh, I already hate him so much. So that I think that when it comes to this matchup and the way that we've been playing since the trade, because we have we've had the best record in the West since then, right? I think it was Milwaukee that is the only team that had a slightly better record than
Memphis
us.
Memphis has had a good record since the trade.
They have too. I think they've gone, what was it, 10-8 or something like that? It's not amazing, but it was like,
I thought it was 18-10. Actually,
maybe it's 18-10. Maybe that's what it was. Which is solid. So I think that's impressive, but I don't know, man. The playoffs are such a different animal. Like, it's crazy how different it is, and how I feel like teams don't score as much because the defensive intensity is so much higher. And we're a really good defensive team. And so I don't know. Memphis is pretty solid too, but we got to hope that freaking Jaren Jackson gets into foul trouble like he normally does, because I think that might be the biggest key for this whole thing. Is if Jaren Jackson gets into foul trouble, it's going to be a similar situation with Karl Anthony Towns. If you take him out of the game, then we instantly close any gaps that are there.
Yeah, that's a great point. If Philly's going to win, they're going to do it inside, right? I just don't see the Lakers out shooting Memphis. It's going to come down to, can they control the paint, which they should, and they don't. I kind of think you let Ja do whatever within reason. Like, you don't let him pop off for 40, right? Yeah. But it's okay if he scores 30. You can't let Tyus Jones, Dillon Brooks, I'm already forgetting the other dude's name, Desmond Bane. Yeah. You can't let them go off for 20 apiece and hit,
I agree,
10 combined threes. That's where you would lose that game.
Yeah, this needs to be the Allen Iverson Sixers situation where, you know, AI is going to get a certain number of points, but you've got to limit it to that. You know, you can't have Eric Snow go off for 25 as well. You can't have Dikembe Mutombo dominating the paint. Like you can, like you've got to be able to you know, it's like you pick your wins and losses with that. And I'm hoping that they see it for what it is. And yeah, I mean, I really, really like our chances. I think that, and I agree with what was his name, Jason?
Yeah.
I think that the Lakers get it done in six. I think if it goes...
Oh, you're picking the Lakers in six, huh?
I think Lakers in six. I think if it goes seven, then we might lose.
That's probably fair because that would be in Memphis. It would be a big game.
I'm not saying we do lose. I think that we can win in seven, but I feel like the chances are higher if we're able to pull it off in six.
Yeah,
we have to win one of the first two games, though.
I actually think the Lakers will win in five. I think that Memphis, it's really hard, even when you're shooting well, to beat teams that have such a size advantage. Come back to that Minnesota game. Minnesota's taller than Memphis, even without Rudy Gobert and Jaden McDaniels. They had more length than Memphis will have.
Yeah.
And they outshot LA. They were playing great offensively until the fourth quarter. The first half
was so good, and it just kind of died off.
I think a lot of that is the Laker defense. And once they started switching everything, they really clamped. And they cared more.
Yeah.
So the two biggest concerns for me for the Lakers in this series, the only way they would lose it in my eyes, Kyle, is if there's an injury, which is very it's highly probable.
Unfortunately, it is highly probable based on everything.
Or if for whatever reason, it could be Grizzlies are down a couple guys, it could, you know, name the reason, if the Lakers don't come with the requisite effort and care. There's just been a look. Dennis Schroeder has played with effort all year. Reeves always plays with that on and a little bit AD.
Yeah. I think both of those guys are definitely, it really does rest on those guys. Whether it's subconscious or not, like if the effort is not what it needs to be from those guys, then we are in big trouble.
Yep. Totally. It boils down to that. So, AD, this would be a series where if he ever wants to reclaim his spot as one of the top guys in the league, this is it. There's nobody that can guard you. Go in and average 30 and 15.
Yep.
And because that seems like it should be not an expectation, but a real possibility. And if he were to do that, I think it would really put a lot of people on notice that this dude maybe is regaining his form from the end of the bubble time down in Orlando.
Yeah, I mean, that's when he's feeling good, that's what he averages. Like he put together a big string of 30 plus point performances, even, you know, the high teen rebounds as well. And it's like it's easy for him when he's healthy. That's the crazy thing too, is it's like it comes easier. Here's another thing too, though, is I don't know how much of a role it will play, because the Lakers we're fortunate that we get to the free throw line so much. That's where a big disparity is too, is that the Lakers get to the free throw line more than any other team. And so hopefully that will play a big role, but man, in those like late game free throw situations, AD is awful. Awful. Yeah. I think it's what, like under 5 minutes, he's only like 30% from the line. Like it just gets really, really bad. Schroeder and Reeves, D'Angelo, those guys obviously are super good, but AD is the likely one to get fouled in later game situations. So, but I think if we're able to get to the free throw line, you know, a significant number of times before the end of the game, then I think that we'll be fine. I think that will play a really big role too.
Free throw. There we go. That narrative bothers me with LA. Like they're getting some benefit from the whistle. I'm like, no,
they're
LA.
Not.
LA can't shoot the ball, so they play inside a lot and they play great D.
Yeah.
This isn't NBA conspiracy here. They play a certain brand of basketball that lends themselves to get more whistles on one end.
And because of their capable defenders, they don't foul as much on the other end. I think it's pretty simple.
I think so too. And it's funny because I've seen time and time again where the Lakers just did not get a blatant foul whistle that, you know,
LeBron James numerous times at the end of games.
Many, many times for LeBron at the end of the game that, you know, we could have won it doing that. Also, you remember when Joel Embiid was basically just holding Russell Westbrook's arm the whole way as he tried to attack the basket, like it, so blatantly obvious right in front of the officials. So it's like, okay, if the conspiracy is there, I'm pretty sure that there would have been some other whistles called. So I'm not really buying that. I think that the Lakers are smart. They recognize, you know, and maybe that's credit to Darvin Ham. Maybe it's credit to LeBron or just collective, but it's like, hey, we're not an amazing shooting team. So we've got to get to the free throw line to balance this out. And Austin Reeves is a freaking master when it comes to drawing contact. And there's a couple times where he definitely like sells it a little bit for sure, but the contact is there.
Yeah.
Like when you go back and if you watch highlights of Reeves drawing fouls, he definitely does sell it a little bit, but it is still a foul. Like the contact is there. He definitely knows how to like, you know, put his body in a position to draw the foul as well as make it known, hey, I just got fouled. So I don't buy the whole, oh, Reeves is just like James Harden kind of thing. Like, no, it's that's not the case at all. I think that Reeves is just a very smart player, and he is able to draw contact and get defenders in positions that they shouldn't have been in.
Yeah, I agree. Well, let's end with this. How far do you think they go?
Oh, boy. Well, realistically, they can go to the finals. They can. However, there's some big ifs. Lot of it comes down to health. I think that's the biggest thing. I truly believe that if this team does not get any major injuries, then I think it's very possible for us to go to the NBA finals, potentially win. But big capital B-U-T on there, I think based on injury proneness and the fact that LeBron is playing with basically a torn tendon in his foot, and AD has, you know, he's just one sneeze away from, you know, being out for a few days. Like, odds are, I say go to, I think we make it out of the first round at least, second round. Because if we go to the second round, we'll play either the Clippers or the Suns, right?
No, they'd play Kings, Warriors.
Oh, interesting. I think that we can beat Sacramento for sure. Warriors, I think that we can beat them. We have beaten them a couple times this year, but it's like it depends on what version of the Warriors you get.
Exactly.
If we're getting the version of the Warriors that they're just knocking down the most absurd shots you've ever seen and they're playing defense the way that they can, then I don't know if we beat that team. But if they are not shooting the ball well, they don't move the ball well, and the defense is poor, then I think we kill them. And so I don't know. Depends on which Warriors team you get. I think we definitely beat Sacramento, though. I think because of the lack of experience there. They're a really good young team, but I don't think that Sacramento will beat the Warriors. I think it's possible, depending on what version of the Warriors you get.
Yep, yeah. I would say the safe bet is that they lose in the second round. There's just too many ifs, but
yeah.
Regardless, I think we'd agree on this. It's enjoyable to like the team again, to have them playing meaningful basketball. I'm really looking forward to that because it's just the bubble was fun, but it didn't feel the same.
Not having the crowd, like even just watching the play-in game and hearing the extra noise, it was like, it was just way different. Like even just through the TV, hearing like the defensive chants and stuff like that was like, whoa, this is different. Because I think LA fans, because there's so many celebrities and stuff. It's like they're too cool to cheer and get into it unless it's a really significant situation.
Right.
But man, that was really cool. So it's exciting. It's oddly like peaceful to know that I'm okay with if I mean, I'm not okay with us losing, but I'm okay with us not, you know, winning at all necessarily, because I like the team and I like the players we have, because I don't feel like there's just this cancer in the locker room. And whether that's, you know, I don't know if I can say, you know, Westbrook was a cancer per se, but it's like it wasn't a good situation. You see that video clip when LeBron was like, hey, let's get greedy, everyone. And then Westbrook cuts him off and is like, hey, no matter win, lose, or draw, let's have fun.
Totally.
You could just see LeBron's face like, seriously? Like, yep. What? And then he got traded shortly after that. I thought that was kind of funny.
Well, it's been great having you back on. We'll have to do this again. Maybe what we need to do is one of these games, we should just go live in the fourth quarter, live reaction to what happens.
Yeah, I think that would be super fun. We definitely need to do that. And I told Madison we got to come watch a game over at your place, because I feel like it might be tough for you to watch it anywhere else with the new baby.
Unfortunately, the kids makes it difficult, but you guys are welcome over anytime.
It's all good. Congratulations again. If people don't know, you know, two kids, man, two of them.
What? Where does the time go?
Dude, I don't know. I don't know, but I'm super happy.
Thanks. All right. Well, we'll be in touch. We'll get you over for some playoff games. And it's just, hey, it's fun to be back in the playoffs with some meaningful basketball.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Thanks for having me on.
Anytime. See you, Kyle. Thanks, man. Right. Take care.
Bye.
There you go. Conversation with Kyle Bruder about the Lakers and their chances in the playoffs, which starts by the time you listen to this, they may have already played game one. So thanks to all of you who listen. Appreciate it. Try to be a little more regular. I know I've said that multiple times. It's hard with two kids and a family and a couple jobs, but I'll do what I can to make this semi-regular. So take care. Have a great week and enjoy the playoffs, and we'll talk to you soon.